I now give the floor to His Excellency Bruno Rodriguez Parreira, Minister of Foreign Affairs of Cuba.
Señor Presidente.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, Excellencies, heads of state and government, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, we live in a globalized world which is moving towards multipolarity in an era characterized by a threat to the very survival of the human species. Neither the government of the United States nor NATO will be able to reverse that trend through a new distribution of the world through the use of arms. However, there is a serious risk that in attempting to do so, the world become an ungovernable place. The enormous accumulation of nuclear and conventional arsenals, the annual military expenditures which are imposed that amount to $1,750 billion, and the 2% increase of the military budget's share of the GDP, as required from all NATO member states, will be of no use in order to tackle issues such as poverty, hunger, epidemics, migration waves, nor will it help in order to avert the water, energy, food, environmental, and global economy crisis. As has already been demonstrated, wherever the so-called unconventional warfare is applied, as described in Training Circular 1801 of the Special Operations Forces, and the innovations of the United States Defense Strategy Quadrennial Review, both documents issued in 2010, chaos will be imposed through the destabilization or destruction of states, through the proliferation of violent and extremist groups, through the sundering of nations, cultures, and religions. It will create serious threats to regional and international peace and security. It is necessary to reject militarization of cyberspace, the illegal and covert intervention into information systems of some countries with the purpose of using them to perpetuate aggressive actions against third countries with a view to stirring up conflict. It is also necessary to reject global espionage on governments and entire societies. The extraterritorial implementation of United States laws to the detriment of other sovereign nations is increasingly aggressive. There is a proliferation of unilateral sanctions, particularly in the area of finances, and this is used as a foreign policy instrument. The use of U.S. courts of justice to apply multi-million dollar fines, even on its allies, based on court rulings that violate international law, has become an instrument of punishment, threats, and a means to spuriously securing financial resources. If governments refuse the defense of their sovereignty and the implementation of their own laws aimed at protecting international financial system standards, if they decline legitimate interests of their nations, companies, and citizens, they will be creating the conditions necessary for the dissemination of these practices that jeopardize the very independence of all states and the rule of international law. Media empires are ever more linked to the hegemonic goals pursued by Western powers. They continue with their misinformation campaigns. They manipulate facts in a shameful and cynical way, and they create public opinion matrices that favor aggression. a new, different international order is required, where there is no room for the philosophy of war and for the plundering of natural resources. Foreign intervention in Syria must come to an end. It is inconceivable that Western powers encourage, finance, and arm terrorist groups to pit them against one state, while at the same time they attempt to combat their crimes in another state, as is currently occurring in Iraq. The government of the United States is violating international law when, in contempt for the United Nations organization, it launches unilateral bombings with complete disregard for national borders or sovereign state, while dissimulating it under dubious coalitions. The attempt to deploy NATO up to the borders of Russia will have serious consequences for international peace and security and for the stability of Europe. The sanctions imposed on Russia are both immoral and unjust. The U.S. strategic deployment in Asia and the Pacific will jeopardize the sovereignty of all nations in that region. Israel's crimes against the Palestinian people, most recently in the Gaza Strip, should not go unpunished under the shelter of the Security Council veto. Palestine should already be a member state of the United Nations, which is to be established within the borders agreed in 1967 and with East Jerusalem as its capital. The General Assembly should exercise the prerogatives entrusted to it by the Charter, given the currently dangerous and unstable international situation, which is replete with threats and challenges. The Security Council should be rebuilt upon the basis of democracy, transparency, a fair representation of the countries of the South, which currently suffer discrimination due to the differences made between permanent and non-permanent members. It should be built on credibility, strict observance of the United Nations Charter without double standards, obscure procedures, or obsolete vetoes. The United Nations organization requires profound reform and the defense of its principles. The Secretary General should be an advocate and guarantor of international peace and security. Mr. President, the 1.2 billion people who live in extreme poverty, the 842 million people who suffer from chronic hunger, the 774 million illiterate adults, and the 57 million boys and girls who are not in school, are all confirmation for us that the Millennium Development Goals, which were questionable from the start from a methodological point of view, were a mere mirage. There has been, and there still is, a lack of political will among the governments of industrialized states, where blind and ineffective selfishness prevail. Voracious transnational empires increasingly concentrate ownership of vast resources. The unequal distribution of wealth is increasingly more brutal. A new international economic order is unavoidable. It is an imperative. Under these circumstances, coordination of the post-2015 development agenda provides little hope. Nevertheless, we must attempt to achieve it as our most urgent task. It should be an intergovernmental and inclusive negotiation. The resulting document should not be the interpretation of what consensus is by a few, but rather the consensus itself. It is urgent to make sub-Saharan Africa a priority. It is necessary to jointly and resolutely confront, through sufficient and genuine cooperation, the Ebola epidemic that is affecting some countries of that continent. Cuba decided to maintain its medical cooperation with the 32 African countries where more than 4,000 Cuban specialists are working, and to further expand it under the leadership of the World Health Organization to other more affected countries, as has already been announced. Our doctors and paramedical staff will do so on an entirely voluntary basis. We call upon the international community, and we call particularly upon the industrialized countries with abundant resources to vigorously respond to the appeal launched by the United Nations and the WHO so as to immediately have the financial, health, and scientific resources necessary to eradicate this scourge and to prevent it from taking a higher toll on human lives. Likewise, all necessary resources should be contributed in support of Agenda 2063 of the African Union, which has established the roadmap for the development of that region. In these 5 decades, 325,000 Cuban health workers have assisted 158 nations of the South, including 39 African countries, where 76,000 cooperation workers have served. Also, a total of 38,000 doctors have been trained free of charge in 121 countries, and of these, 3,902 doctors were from African nations. If Cuba, a small and blockaded country, has been able to achieve this, how much more could be done in favor of Africa with the cooperation from all of us, especially from the wealthiest states? Mr. President, at the second summit of the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States held in Havana, it was agreed that in order to achieve the goal of having more just and inclusive societies, it was indispensable to have better distribution of wealth and revenue, to eradicate illiteracy, to provide quality education for all, and to establish true food security and universal coverage health systems, among other human rights. The solemn proclamation of Latin America and the Caribbean as a zone of peace, which was signed by the heads of state and government of the region, enshrines the respect for the principles and rules of international law, the promotion of a culture of peace, of nuclear disarmament, and general and complete disarmament. And it enshrines the inalienable right of every state to choose its own political, economic, and social system. We also assumed a commitment to turning Latin America and the Caribbean into a region free from colonialism, and we supported the Puerto Rican people's undeniable right to free determination and independence. The Havana Summit recognized that the current economic, financial, and environmental crisis has harshly hit the small island developing states, among them the Caribbean nations. Their efforts to enhance the living standards of their peoples should not be undermined by classifying these states as middle-income countries based on the schematic estimation of per capita incomes, while overlooking their peculiarities and vulnerabilities. The Latin America and Caribbean region has found in CELAC a legitimate and indigenous space where it is able to forge, based on rich diversity, the unity which is vital to materializing the dreams of our national heroes to achieve a definitive independence of our America and make a substantial contribution to the equilibrium of the world. In that endeavor, the celebration, the holding of the BRICS UNASUR conference, the meeting between Chinese leaders and the representatives of Latin America and the Caribbean countries, and the foundation of CELAC Forum in Brasilia on July last, as agreed in Havana, have been major landmarks. We welcome the Fortaleza Declaration, also adopted at that time in Brazil at the sixth summit of BRICS, the economies of which countries account for 25% of the world's GDP and almost 40% of the population of the planet. We also welcome the foundation of the New Development Bank and a common fund for foreign currency reserves, both of which are crucial for the countries of the South and for the construction of a new international financial architecture. We would like to express our wholehearted solidarity with the Bolivarian and Chavista revolution, which keeps struggling and defending itself from the destabilizing actions and foreign interference under the leadership of President Nicolas Maduro. We support the battle of dignity being waged by Argentina against speculation funds, and we oppose the U.S. court rulings which violate international law and which interfere with this process. Moreover, we reiterate our firm support to Argentina's legitimate rights over the Malvinas Islands. We reiterate our unswerving support to the struggle being waged by Ecuador against the pillaging and environmental damage caused by transnational companies' activities there. On the eve of observing the International Decade of Afro Descendants, 2015 to 2024, we would like to remind you that this is the year that marks the 210th anniversary of the independence of Haiti, whose revolution for independence and against slavery was the forerunner of all liberation movements in Latin America and the Caribbean. Haiti deserves a special contribution for its reconstruction and development under the sovereign leadership of its government, for which we call upon the entire international community. We support the Caribbean's claim for reparations from the colonial powers for the horrors of slavery. Mr. President, the State Department has again included Cuba in its unilateral and arbitrary list of states that sponsor international terrorism. Its true purpose is to increase persecution of our international financial transactions around the world and to justify their policy of blockade. Under the current administration, there has been an unprecedented tightening of the extraterritorial nature of the blockade, with a remarkable and unheard-of emphasis on financial transactions through the imposition of multimillion-dollar fines on banking institutions of third countries. Such is the case with the outrageous and unfair mega fine imposed on the French bank BNP Paribas. Nor does it give up promoting destabilization of Cuba. Every year, it allocates millions of dollars to this purpose and increasingly resorts to covert methods, including the use of information and communications technologies. The Sunsune project of USAID not only violates Cuban laws, but also violates U.S. domestic laws, is the latest evidence of this. The most recent disclosures about the use of young people from our continent in subversive actions in Cuba, a project funded and executed by USAID, confirm the countless denunciations made by the Cuban government against ongoing illegal plans of the United States to subvert Cuba's internal order in violation of the sovereignty of Cuba, of third countries, and of international law. We cannot but recall that this month marks the 16th year of the unjust imprisonment of three Cubans from the Group of Five, Gerardo, Ramon, and Antonio, who, with utmost altruism, confronted the terrorist plans that are organized within the United States territory against our country. I reiterate, therefore, on behalf of the people and government of Cuba, that we will not cease in our efforts to call for their return to their homeland. Cuba, for its part, remains calm and prepared to establish a mutually respectful and responsible dialogue with U.S. government based on reciprocity. Also, Cuba continues to make progress in the updating of its social and economic model in the midst of adverse international circumstances characterized by a global economic crisis and the tightening of the blockade. Updating Cuba's economic socialist model is aimed at ensuring the well-being, equity, and social justice for all Cubans. The changes that we are introducing are also geared to preserving the achievements of the revolution, the ones so many generations have fought for. The goal is to build an ever more just, prosperous, and sustainable Cuban socialism. Thank you very much.
I thank the Foreign Minister of Cuba for his statement.